welcome to the Parrot Care Sessions, produced by Talking Naturally, exclusively for the World Parrot Trust. This is a series of in-depth conversations with leading experts, helping you to discover better ways to live with and care for your feathered friends. Hello, today on the Parrot Care Sessions, I'm joined by Dr. Scott Eccles, a board-certified avian veterinary specialist, adjunct professor at Texas A&M College of Veterinary Medicine, a past president for the Association for Avian Veterinarians, a frequent lecturer at multiple universities and conferences in the US and abroad, as well as being an author and filmmaker. His forays into filmmaking led him to establish Avian Studios, where he creates educational media that help teach people about the changes they can make to improve and enrich the lives of their companion parrots. Today, we're talking about the bird respiratory system and the diseases that can affect it, because no one enjoys seeing a loved one under the weather. But one of the most terrifying experiences a parrot caregiver can have is when their bird suddenly goes into respiratory arrest and stops breathing. Dr. Eccles is here to share some important information on what every parrot owner should know to keep their feathered friends breathing easy. Dr. Eccles, Scott, welcome once again to the Parrot Care Sessions. It's great to talk with you.
Well, thank you. As always, I enjoy doing these presentations. It's a great opportunity to disseminate some information.
Scott, this podcast is all about understanding the bird respiratory system and the diseases that can affect that system. So let's start with the basics. What is the respiratory system?
Okay, well, it's actually a quite complicated system in birds, but it involves portions of the bird that are involved in breathing. So that includes, we'll just start top down, that includes the sinuses, the trachea or windpipe that connects from the oral cavity down into the lungs, and the next part, of course, is the lungs, and then we have the air sac system. So in birds, most birds generally have about 9 air sacs. It's a very different, anatomically, functionally different system than we see with mammals.
I was just going to say the same thing, Scott, that a bird's respiratory system really is substantially different to other animals that a vet might see, like a cat or a dog, or even for that matter, from our own.
Yes, in fact, it even extends into several of the bones, which in part allows the bird to be lightweight because the bones, actually many of them are hollow, and they actually accommodate the respiratory system, and they're actually integrated together.
Right, and it's probably worth mentioning at this point, Scott, that unlike our lungs, a bird's lungs don't inflate and deflate as the bird breathes in and out, do they?
That's correct. In fact, that's a very good point, because if you think about when we breathe in, the same is true with a dog or a cat or a horse. When we breathe in, our chest expands, and with that expansion, the lungs expand. And the way we exchange air is when, as the lungs expand, these little pockets called alveoli expand and increases the surface area on which air and blood vessels can exchange oxygen. So we breathe as we breathe in and we hold our breath. Birds breathe as air moves across the lung tissue. Because the lungs minimally expand, birds have to continuously breathe. And this is why when we have problems, say, with anesthesia, or if you're holding and restraining a bird too tightly, if they're not moving their chest enough, they're not effectively breathing.
So I would assume I'm right in saying, Scott, that that need to have air continuously flowing over the lung surface is what can make respiratory illnesses so dangerous to the bird.
Absolutely. And birds exchange oxygen both when they breathe in and when they breathe out. So you could say that they breathe and exchange oxygen twice with each breath, whereas we only do it when we breathe in. So they're respiratory system on one end is very, very efficient. On the other end, if anything disrupts that, it can dramatically affect their breathing and cause problems. So yes, it is a big issue. When you see a bird that's breathing hard, that is definitely an emergency situation.
Thanks very much, Scott. So let's turn, if we may, now to respiratory illnesses themselves. What are the most common respiratory illnesses that you see in your practice?
Okay. Well, I'm going to kind of break them down and base them on those four areas. So we have the sinuses, the trachea or the windpipe, the lungs, and then the air sacs. So in the sinuses, any type of mass that obstructs the sinus, so that can include nasal discharge, it can include fungal masses, it can include tumors. For birds that are vitamin A deficient, it can include granulomas or kind of where the tissue becomes abnormal and it occludes that space. Those are not generally life-threatening, and the bird can still breathe, but they have to open their mouth to breathe. Okay, then we have windpipe diseases, and there's a couple different types. The most common ones are life-threatening, and that's where the windpipe is occluded by a mass of some sort. That can be a foreign body, such as when a bird inhales a seed or some other food item. It can be when fungal granuloma or bacterial mass forms. So in other words, it's not like a foreign body, but it simply acts as a foreign body and it shuts off airflow. And those are life-threatening. And then you have some other things that occasionally happen. We have what are called tracheal strictures or windpipe strictures, and that's where there's damage to the windpipe, and the body's reaction causes it to constrict down, and that also closes off breathing. Those are emergency situations. So diseases of the windpipe are often far more severe. Okay, and then we have diseases of the lung, and there's many different types. The one that a lot of people think about is fungal diseases like aspergillosis, and that's where you get masses of basically fungal, almost tumors, but fungal disease in the lungs. And those are difficult to treat. They are life-threatening in the long term, but they typically develop slowly and they typically recover slowly. Then you have actual cancer or tumors. You can have bacterial infections in the lung as well. There are some parasitic diseases that can affect the lung. Some of those cause very sudden reactions, and those can lead to respiratory arrest and other things. And then we have another group, and that is the inhaled toxin type of reaction. The classic example is smoke. So, a bird that is in a smoky area, such as with a burning house or something like that, those birds have severe reactions in their lungs, and obviously they're life-threatening. Teflon is another one.
And Scott, you and I did actually talk about Teflon on another Parrot Care Sessions podcast we did on toxins, which listeners might want to refer to.
And that's a great example, but Teflon and any other aerosol can potentially cause a reaction, and the lungs do a variety of things. They may bleed, they may produce fluid, and all these problems decrease the ability of the body to exchange oxygen, and that leads to respiratory arrest. Okay, and then you have the air sacs. You can actually have significant disease in the air sacs and still have a bird that can seemingly do okay. And this is one where we actually see progressive problems. And by the time the bird is actually showing clinical signs, maybe they're breathing hard or they're not feeling well, they can have advanced air sac disease because the air sacs are normally very thin, very pliable. And as they become diseased, again, with fungal infections, bacterial infections, or other things, they just don't work as well, but the lungs can still work. And, over time, we have to have pretty advanced air sac disease before we see respiratory disease where it's actually obvious to us.
Right.
Another type that falls into the air sac disease is when you have compressive masses that push and decrease the size of the air sac. The classic example is when the belly is full of fluid. So the belly, basically that fluid presses down or kind of minimizes the air sacs. So the bird doesn't really have the air sacs to function, but they still have their lungs to work.
Thanks, Scott. A wealth of information as always. You were saying there that some of these respiratory diseases can take a long time to develop. Are there any early warning signs that caregivers ought perhaps to be looking out for?
Yes, I mean the classic sign with respiratory disease for most of them, and I'm gonna take the sinus problems out for right now, but for the remaining ones, it's going to be difficulty breathing. The early sign is that they have a tail pump. In other words, at rest, their tail simply pumps. You should not see a bird do that unless they've gone through heavy exercise. So their tail should sit level. So if you're watching the bird at a perch and its tail is actually pumping, that suggests there's increased respiratory effort, something is going on. Doesn't mean it's a terminal problem, but it needs to be checked out.
Perhaps we should say here, Scott, actually, that there are some species of birds that do pump their tails actively all the time. But if we see it in a parrot, then there's a problem. And can I just ask, is this tail pumping helping somehow to increase the airflow within the body?
Okay, so the pumping, what's happening is the body is trying to increase airflow into the body to increase oxygenation. As a result, it's working harder, it's using its muscles, and the visible sign is that tail pump.
Right, but tail pumping is not the only visible sign of respiratory distress, obviously.
Yes, with upper respiratory problems in the sinuses, you may see discharge come out of the nares or the nostrils. You may also see open mouth breathing, but it's usually not labored. In other words, the bird just kind of sits there with its mouth open, but is not really struggling to breathe. And then you can have a puffiness around the eyes, around the face, and what's happening is the sinuses that are around the eyes and the face are becoming distended with fluid or debris or something else.
Scott, is there a correlation between the severity of the signs that you can see and the severity of the illness? In other words, the more severe the signs, the more severe the illness, or does it not really work that way?
It's not a direct correlation to severity, but it does say have your bird examined as soon as possible.
And if a caregiver sees these signs come on, particularly if they come on and they're quite severe, what's the first thing that you would recommend that they do, Scott?
Well, first thing is, if you notice the respiratory signs, like the tail pump and the difficulty breathing, has come on very rapidly, and you don't know why, the first thing is get it out of that environment. Because if there is an aerosol toxin, such as Teflon, such as smoke or perfume or something else the bird is reacting to, get it out of that environment. So the very first thing, if you have a bird that has sudden respiratory signs, get it out of that environment.
That's great advice, Scott. Thank you. So, Scott, let's assume now that a caregiver has seen these signs. They realize that their bird is in distress and they want to get them to a veterinarian as soon as possible. Is there anything that they should do to prepare the bird for the journey, which, you know, might prevent any further damage from occurring?
The bird is stable, or you're getting ready to go on a trip to see your veterinarian, the thing would be just to make it comfortable and keep it in, you know, a cage that's quiet and calm and can be transported easily in. You don't want to stress out a bird more than you have to in traveling. So if the bird, you know, let's say the bird is disturbed by being in the car and seeing cars go by and so forth, you might want to cover the cage, and you want to do what you need to make that bird as comfortable and calm as possible during that transport process.
And then, Scott, once the caregiver gets to the veterinarian, is there something aside from the external signs that we've been discussing that you as a professional might use to diagnose what kind of respiratory illness is occurring?
Absolutely. So first thing I always tell people, and I teach this to other young veterinarians, is the history is very important. And the history is going to give us some indications to where the bird was when the problem started. Was it around other birds? What are the situations and so forth? All those are very, very important clues to figure out the problem. So the first thing is a complete history. But specifically the diagnostics we're going to use, one is going to be x-rays. So taking x-rays of the body, we're going to be able to get a view of the air sacs, the lungs, maybe even some of the upper respiratory regions as well. Also, endoscopy has become invaluable in looking at and actually endoscoping and viewing the respiratory system. So we can actually go in through the side, make a very small incision, look at the air sacs, look at the lung system. We can even run the endoscope down the windpipe and get a good look down that tube as well. So endoscopy has become very important. And there are some blood work values that we look at. Now, there is no blood value that says, ah, this bird has respiratory disease. But what we look at is there evidence of an infection or inflammation? Do we have other organs that may be involved that we need to be aware of that can put pressure on or contribute to respiratory disease? Now, obviously, you know, there's several organs that are associated with the respiratory system. For example, the heart would be the most obvious one. But we also can have diseases of the liver, where the liver swells and increases in size and puts pressure on the respiratory system and others.
Scott, whenever we speak, I'm always struck by just how complex this work is that you do. How far of an advance has there been in veterinary science in, say, the last 20 years?
You know, our understanding of these diagnostics and diseases in general in birds has really advanced over the past 10 to 20 years. So every year, I'm just amazed at what comes out, and it adds to our body of knowledge and understanding of disease, and especially how to either prevent in some cases or treat those diseases. As far as the technology, it's vastly improved. Even the x-rays that we have available today, digital with, these adaptations to blow up and expand the view and so forth, they are far superior to some of the x-rays we had, say, 20 years ago. So right. Our diagnostic tools, our understanding of respiratory diseases and diseases in general has dramatically improved, which is great.
Yeah, that is great. That is great. I guess one of the reasons I ask the question, Scott, is I can see a situation where a caregiver may bring a parrot with breathing problems to you or any other veterinarian. And the suggestion may be that the parrot has to be anesthetized. I can see that might cause some anxiety in a caregiver, you know, if the bird is already having breathing problems. So I wondered whether the advances in technology and the advances in the tools available to you, A, mean that putting a bird under anesthesia is safer than it used to be, and B, that you're having to put birds under anesthesia less often than you used to have to.
Well, okay, there's two parts to this answer. One is that in some senses, our anesthetic protocols are far better than they were 20 years ago. The drugs are better, our understanding of how birds metabolize these drugs and how they work. So we're actually able to more safely put birds under anesthesia for these procedures. Of course, we did a presentation on anesthesia.
We did.
Yeah, so that's one part. The second part is some of our diagnostics are definitely better. Some we can do without anesthesia, some we need anesthesia. So I would say that we actually can more safely put birds under anesthesia if needed. And sometimes we need those steps to get a better diagnostic view. For example, even with x-rays, if you have a bird that is in distress, it might seem odd to put the bird under anesthesia if it's having respiratory problems. However, we can oftentimes make that bird less stressed by putting it under anesthesia rather than trying to wrestle it into a position to get x-rays. So in that situation, we may actually find that anesthesia is safer for the bird right. than trying to do the same procedure manually without anesthesia.
Thanks, Scott. That makes great sense. Can I ask, are there any respiratory illnesses that you deal with that are more prevalent or perhaps less prevalent than they were in the recent past?
Well, you know, I travel around the country in the United States, and I do see incidences of disease, respiratory disease, change from location to location. So whereas we may read a book and it says, you know, so many birds get X disease, well, unfortunately, that information really only applies to a single location, maybe right. a state, maybe even just a region within a state, and not necessarily nationwide. So to answer your question, I think that we have become better at diagnosing a larger variety of diseases. So whereas I used to believe if a bird had these symptoms, it was more than likely going to be this disease, now I have to say, all right, well, it is this species in that location, and it's this age, and it has these nutritional issues and so forth. And that's how I use that information to categorize the possibilities. So there is no one set of diseases that I would say applies to all birds in terms of respiratory disease.
Scott, presumably there where you're talking about the different frequencies of diseases within different states of the US, you're talking about the effects that the altitude of the state has, or perhaps the humidity levels within the state might have on various diseases of the respiratory system.
Yeah, and there's so much, and there's, okay, so there's temperature, there is humidity, there's altitude, which has some effect as well. We have all these different factors that are the environment that affects the health of any animal, really.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's actually quite a complex interplay between disease and health, and the environment is huge. You've heard me mention about sunlight and exposure to sunlight. I feel it's very important in birds that are in kind of more cloudy areas get less sun exposure, and I see their bone quality is poorer. So that's just an example of the environment.
Like you've said many times on these podcasts, there are just so many factors influencing the health of our birds. However, Scott, if you were to leave listeners with just one thing that they can do to lessen the risks of respiratory illness in their parrots, what would that be?
Okay. So there are a couple different things. One, of course, is provide the best nutrition you can. As I mentioned earlier, sunshine therapy. I can't stress it enough that birds need exposure to natural sunlight. And reduce exposure to aerosols. So any type of aerosol you want to keep out of the way of your bird. And regularly have your bird examined. Know what is normal and be ready to recognize abnormalities. And that's probably going to be your best bet to prevent against a large variety of diseases.
Excellent advice and a perfect place to stop. So Dr. Scott Eccles, thank you once again for taking the time out of your busy day to talk with us.
Thank you. I enjoyed it as always.
For more information on caring for your parrot, check out Dr. Eccles' instructional DVDs in the Expert Companion Bird Care series. Volume 1 has a chapter called Identifying When Your Bird is Sick, which includes several images of birds with respiratory illness. These are online at www.avianstudios.com. For more information about parrots and current conservation efforts, visit the World Parrot Trust on the web at www.parrots.org. And for more information about talking naturally, please visit my site at www.talking-naturally.co.uk.